In the deepening darkness of her first night back, Jessica rose from the private writing desk inside her bedchamber, leaving her papers and recordings unfinished. She walked over to the stone wall and threw open the windows to let the cool night air flow in. It came with a hint of fog and the familiar smell of iodine and salt, seaweed and waves. Curling waves slammed harder against the base of the cliff with each advance and retreat. She could see the silvery line of breakers lit by starlight and a waxing moon. The rumble and roar of booming surf and the clatter of rocks moving on the shore soothed her with their constancy, unlike the turmoil that washed across other worlds. Throughout his youth, Paul had listened to those gentle whispers of Caladan seas, and they had given him a sense of serenity, a sense of place and family history. Now, as Muad'Dib, he heard instead the crackling hiss of sandstorms. Hulasikali Wala, as the Fremen called it, the wind that eats flesh, and the defiant shouts of fanatical armies. She couldn't convince herself that Paul's priests would have tried to rename Caladan without at least his implied approval. Had he finally become a leader so powerful that his advisors were afraid to speak honestly to him? Or was he a man without real advisors at all? Paul had prescience. He was the Kwisatz Haderach, with a kind of perceptive wisdom that Jessica did not understand. But did such powers and talents necessarily make Paul infallible? She kept coming back to that question in her mind, and she wondered what psychological damage the Water of Life had done to him in the Fremen ritual that had changed him forever. Some time ago, Reverend Mother Mohayam had warned her about the dangers of this child, the superhuman Kwisatz Haderach who had emerged before his time and slipped out of the sisterhood's control. When the old woman had tested Paul at the age of 15, it had been more than a test. What if the Bene Gesserit accusations about him were correct? What if Jessica had committed a grave, disastrous error by bearing a son instead of a daughter? What if, after all, he was not a messiah, but instead a terrible mistake, an abomination of historic proportions? As she watched the surf, a pale mass of luminescence drifted along, a cluster of plankton shining in the night. Hovering above it with flittering wings and distant cries, seabirds dove down to feed upon the fish that, in turn, fed upon the plankton. Another patch of luminescence drifted closer, caught on an eddy that drove the two clusters together, mixing them in a clash of shifting colors. It reminded Jessica of the jihad. She had reviewed eyewitness accounts of battlefield horrors. Jessica could not delude herself into thinking that the zealous followers were operating beyond her son's control, that Paul did not know the things they did in his name. He had been there, in person. He had seen the atrocities happen, and he had not spoken out against them. Rather, he had urged his fighters onward, had inspired them. "Has your son forgotten who he really is?" Horvu had looked at her with tired, pleading eyes, expecting her to have a ready and truthful answer for him. But she didn't know. Out on the nearby headlands, she spotted a bonfire, which brought to mind the recent aborted festival of the Empty Man. A shiver ran down her spine, as she wondered if her son had become the Empty Man of local legend. "Have I created a monster?" Jessica slept restlessly that night, her thoughts brimming with concerns and realizations about what Paul condoned and why he was doing it. A vivid nightmare started out convincingly as a memory of herself as a young mother slipping into Paul's bedchamber, looking down at the 5-year-old boy. He slept soundly, looking so innocent, yet with a dark potential hidden within him. If only she had known then that this boy would grow up to be a man who sterilized entire worlds, who had the blood of billions of innocent people on his hands, who led a jihad that showed no signs of ending. In her dream, the young mother Jessica looked down at the sleeping child and picked up a pillow. She pressed it hard against his face, holding it there as the boy struggled and fought her. She pressed harder. Jessica bolted awake in a sweat. Her stomach churned with revulsion. Had her fears simply guided her dreams, or was that in itself a warning of what she needed to do? What Reverend Mother Mohayam had always wanted her to do? "I gave life to you, Paul, and I can take it away." When the message arrived from the mother school, even the written word seemed to have the imperative power of voice. The sisterhood demanded that Jessica go to Wallach 9 regarding a most important matter, and the order was signed by Reverend Mother Mohayam herself. Because of her lifetime of training and obligations, Jessica's immediate reaction was to rush there in response to the summons. But she forced herself to pause and throw off the programmed reaction. She was annoyed at the way the sisters tried to manipulate her, how they had always tried to manipulate her. They wanted something. And if she did not go to them willingly on her own terms, they would find some other means of getting her there, some less obvious way. Jessica had returned from Seleucia Secundus only the day before, had just learned of Mayor Horvu's foolish and naive declaration, and now another obligation pulled her away. Once again, she would have to leave Gurney Halleck in charge on Caladan. But he needed to be forewarned. When he came to see her, she was gathering necessary items for her travel wardrobe. "Gurney, I will be back as soon as I can, but the people of Caladan are in your hands for the time being." As she regarded him more closely, she saw a gaunt difference in his expression. He looked deeply shaken. "Gurney, what is it?" The man focused his gaze on the wall rather than directly at her. "A personal matter, my lady. Nothing that need concern you. Come now, my good friend. Maybe I can help, if you'll just let me." He hesitated for a long moment, then said in a stony voice, "My gaze hounds. Bloodfire virus. If I had acted sooner, maybe I could have saved some of them. But I waited too long."
"Oh, Gurney, I'm so sorry."
He took an awkward step backward, separating himself from her. "They were just dogs. I've been through far worse, my lady, and I will endure this." Now she understood why he had been unaware of Mayor Horvu's ill-considered message to Arakeen. But he was a man who preferred to deal with his emotions privately, and her sympathy would only make it more difficult for him.
"It is past, and we both have our jobs to do. Go where you need to go, and I will rule in your absence."
She nodded, but he needed to know what she was leaving him with. "Some of the townspeople have gotten a dangerous and foolish idea into their heads. While you were at your estate, they unilaterally declared Caladan's independence from the Imperium." Gurney stood straighter now.
"Gods below, they can't do that."
"They already have. They sent a formal petition to Muad'Dib. While I'm gone, please don't let this get out of hand."
"It sounds as if it already is out of hand, my lady. But I will do my best to limit the damage."